I'd like to call to order the Madison Plains Board of Education regular meeting. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mason?
Here.
Mrs. Ankis?
Here.
Mr. Butts?
Here.
Mrs. Schooling?
Here.
Mr. Coburn?
Here.
Mr. Detweiler and I are also here.
Please rise to the pledge of allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we'll start with public communication. We have Nick Harris.
Hi, my name's Mick Harris. I got a couple sixth graders here at Madison Plains Elementary. 6195 State Route 56 Southeast. That's. I've got a couple topics bringing to the board. One is I'm curious about the status of the search for the new superintendent of Madison Plains. To be honest, I just would like you, if you can, dispel some of the myths I've been hearing. Again, I'm not part of the board. I'm not a member of the selection committee. I'm just a concerned community member. I've got kids in the school district, and I'm definitely concerned about the next superintendent. There's dissension in the community and in the school district as well. And the next superintendent truly needs to be someone, I believe, and a lot of people believe, from the community. Obviously, you got to have the background and, you know, the right resume and the credentials. Word on the street is that there is a selection committee made up of the Board of Education, teachers, some administrators, some operational type staff members, and some general people in the community. That the selection committee, the assumption is that the selection committee is going to get to see the resumes of all the candidates and vet them out, have the opportunity to interview them, and take the time to make the best selection possible. And again, what I and many people have been hearing is that the Board of Education has already vetted it down to a couple candidates, and the entire committee hasn't even had an opportunity to see any of the information on these candidates yet, any of the candidates, that they haven't had the opportunity to get their backgrounds, hear anything about them, and that they're just going to show up to a meeting and they're going to be presented to. And that's where the interview process is going to start for some of these committee members. And I just assume that's not the way it's going to be, so I hope you can dispel some of those myths and share with us where you're at in the process and how the selection will be done.
Yeah, we don't always go have a documentary communication, but I'm comfortable with doing it. All right, so there is no selection committee. We have two different committees, like you said. One is staff, all different levels of staff, teachers, administrators, certified, classified, everybody across the board. And another one of community members, parents, non-parents, just different combination of community members. They are a committee to give us their thoughts and to help us do our job to select the next superintendent. So I wouldn't call them a selection committee. Their job is to give us their thoughts and their input. Where the process is, we got 18 applications that came in. We as a board met and we looked through every one of those resumes, applications, all the different parts to it, and we decided to extend interviews to 6 of the 18 that we interviewed. Of the 18 applicants. And we interviewed those 6 applicants last week on Monday and Wednesday, and then we narrowed that down to 2 that are going to be presented tomorrow night to those 2 committees. Then we will do a second round of interviews with those 2 individuals next Wednesday. That's the process. So just to clarify, there's not a selection committee. There's a committee that we hope to get their insights to the 2 individuals that we've been appointed.
So ultimately, the decision is Board of Education?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I'm glad to get back in line. I have one other topic.
Go ahead.
Okay. Completely different topic. And I'll try not to sound too much like a hillbilly. I was very, very discouraged when I got the one call saying that school's canceled because of a threat in our schools. Had to explain things to my kids, that what's going on, and we had no idea. I listened to the one call several times, and it was explaining to me that someone wrote something on a bathroom stall. I think it was the girls' bathroom stall, and that they were going to do something at the school the next day. So the decision was made to cancel school. I'd like to propose an idea. You got about 1,000 some odd students. Of that 1,000 students, I'm curious if you could get 1%. 1% of those 1,000 students, male, dad, concerned dad. That's just I would much rather have got a one call saying, Mick, we'd like you and call it a committee to come to the school on Monday because we want to keep the doors open. We need you, 10 people, to stand at each one of the entrances and do bag checks. Because we can't afford to do bag checks of every student coming in. I think I can probably get 1% of parents, just 1%, to get active. I want to come. I'll take a day off work to come and stand and do a bag check. And I realize that there's venting of those individuals. Just so you know, I'm a Cub Master. I'm NERCSEP certified. Won't have a problem passing a background check. I work with kids every day. I want to keep the doors open. You close school, the kids aren't getting educated. That whoever it was that signed, did whatever they did on the bathroom stall, that person just knew. They just learned, hey, you know what? I can trip up the school system. I can get a day off by doing something stupid. I'm sorry. That's not the way I wanted my kids to learn things. They need to learn from right from wrong. I'm willing to be part of that. If you're willing to think about the idea, call me in. I can probably bring a few of my friends with me. Won't have a problem getting background checks. We're just concerned parents that would probably be willing to take that one call and help out. Any comments, any thoughts?
It's very appreciated as a parent of kids in the school as well. A lot of us are. Mr. Detweiler will talk more detail about the threats and the different steps that we've taken later on in the meeting. So hopefully if he doesn't answer your question, we'll talk more about it as well. But I appreciate your input.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, here we go again. Ken Morlock, Vice President of the Fan Boosters. So 9725, Franklin Benjamin. A couple of things, of course, there's always a couple of things. First, congratulations on the levy getting passed, even though it was a slim margin. I was looking at the unofficial results that the Board of Elections had, and by a whopping 21 votes, yay, better than what we've had before. But I think there's still work that the district has to do. You lost in 4 out of the 6 precincts, which, yay for the 2 that really did some wonderful things. We still have problems in Fairfield, Pleasant, and Mount Sterling. Those have been our big 3 problems for a while with different issues, bond issues, and levy issues that we had in the past. So wasn't here for your final stuff, but I think you guys don't have that communication director anymore. That was kind of supposed to help with some of that stuff. So there's still work to be done there. Next thing, I don't know if I'm going to be able to be at the next meeting, which I'm going to try to be, because I know that's going to be Mr. Detweiler's last meeting, but I just wanted to publicly say thank you for all the things that you did. When you first came on as a treasurer, there was a whole bunch of work, cleanup that had to get done, and once all that work was done, we had splendid audits from the state every year. and your recognition by the State Auditor's Office was well publicized and well deserved. When you moved into to be superintendent, two things had happened with trying to spruce up the facilities and much needed. You were able to convince, probably not too hard, but convince the board that PI fund that we had that wasn't really doing anything could really be used to do something that's going to show our school off a little bit better for not only the students, but the community and everybody that comes to the game. So kudos to you for that. One of the things that I know Todd is still doing that you've started, that I encourage the board to please pay attention to the 10-year forecast. That was something that in all the different school board meetings that I've gone to, all the other people that were on the Central Region Executive Committee and all the people that they talked to, nobody ever heard of such a thing. 5-year forecast, that's all we have to do, that's good enough. And Tim was enlightened enough to say, well, no, it's not good enough. We need to see what's going to be happening further in the future. Boone agreed with them, and they worked really hard to get that done. And through that forecast, Boone and Tim were able to do a whole bunch of things with the budget that I don't know how much the community knows that they did to consolidate things. One of the things that that was big, the state didn't help us out at all, but one of the things that they did that was really big was early retirement for a lot of the teachers. By doing that, we saved $100,000 to $150,000 for the 1 year, which is great. Unfortunately, the state kind of hosed us by taking that much money out of all of our funding, so we were back to square one all over again. So it was an ongoing ongoing battle that Tim and Boone had with the state to try to find ways that they can cut and do things, and I think they did a splendid job, still are doing a splendid job, taking a look at that and letting you guys know, okay, here's what's happening. Unfortunately, we did all that we could do, and we were at the point where we were at just a few weeks ago for the election. So all your hard work, I think, did make an improvement to the district. It was a pleasure working with you. It was a pleasure seeing you work the numbers and to give us our options to make things a little bit better for the district, and you deserve those kudos. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Now we move to board work session. So the regularly scheduled board meeting that is scheduled currently for 19 June is going to be moved to 14 June at 7 p.m. Same time and same place. And that is to accommodate my work session. I appreciate it. All right, so next we'll move to approval of board minutes.
Mr. President, I make a motion that the minutes of April 3rd, 2018, April 17th, 2018, May 1st, 2018, and May 7th, 2018 meetings be approved as written.
Sorry. Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mrs. Akers?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And now we'll move to Section F.
Correct.
No student recognition.
Right. So we'll move to Section F, department reports.
And if we have...
Karen is here.
Yes. Yes.
No, we're not doing that.
Not tonight. Yeah, how was the track?
Well, it got delayed twice, so I didn't see anything. I made the trip to Westford Overpack. No.
Wow.
See some blue. Scenic tour. So, yeah. Okay. Tim and Tula had asked me to speak to you a little bit about our new district K-6 report cards. Throughout this year, we have gone into the second phase with our report card process that we began 2 years ago. At the elementary school, the changes that were made 2 years ago have been in place at the elementary school also. But what the committee that we worked with this year gathered together to do was to refine our K-6 report cards. Morgan Gauss, who is one of our sixth grade teachers, worked with me as an internship experience that she was doing in administration this year to facilitate these meetings. When we first gathered, we discussed what we liked and didn't like about our K-6 report cards, markings, standards, the way things were listed, and came to some agreements about things we wanted to see stay and things we wanted to see change. One of the biggest things for you to realize is, I think it's been about 7 years since these were updated, and at the time that they were updated, each grade level was permitted to just make their own report card. So the report cards didn't look anything the same from K to 6. There were a lot of major differences. So what we did was just talk about refining it so that there was more in common than there was different in the K to 6 report cards. You've already actually approved some of the marking changes in a previous meeting through the school handbook, but this looks for you so you can see what the end result looks like. So some things that we did were we removed the satisfactory, unsatisfactory labels that were on there, and just with the numbering system like we were doing in the other subjects. The satisfactory rating was only occurring in special areas like music and art, so we just went with the numbering system, just like we've been doing for the core subject areas. And then also where we find all of our standard statements. So if you scroll up a little bit there, you can see in the past, some of the standard statements had a lot of vague language to them that lacked specificity for a parent to understand what exactly it was their student was being graded on or scored on. So now we did much simpler statements and tried to do them in succinct language. The only thing that is different a little bit here is if you go down to the last two standards, or the last standard on the fifth grade report card there, rather than rating them as on the 1 through 4 scale, we wanted to go with just a yes or a no, were they reading grade level text, at least grade level text. And that was something that was important to our teachers because they felt like sometimes the numbering gets left off or gets lost in there and parents don't realize that their child is reading below, even though they're doing some of these things, they're reading below grade level. So that was important for our teachers. And then if you scroll up there, then you can, down. you can see that all falls in line with all the subject areas. Another addition to our report card is technology is being scored. This goes back to the fact that it was 7 years ago that these were updated, and at that point technology was not its own class. And so we've had that as a class for a while, so we put those on there as standards for that teacher to be able to score students on also. So if you've had a chance to glance through all of the report cards, you'll notice that they all look exactly the same language. And so you can kind of track how, from K to 6, how students are expected to progress in each of those subject areas. The only other thing that I would mention is, can you pull up like a second grade report card? As you know, we've been very focused on K to 3 literacy.
Or 3K.
How about K? K, 1, 2, any one of those. And then scroll on down there. down to the bottom of that page. Okay. The page went a little. Thank you. Up a little. There it is. Okay, so you know we've been very focused on the K-3 literacy, and part of that is students being required to be put on a reading improvement and monitoring plan by state standards that were required to do that when they don't meet certain criteria. And we communicate that in a separate document to parents of what that plan is, but our teachers felt that it was important to state there that whether or not they were on that plan, so parents could see very clearly that this is something that we are working on the report card as well. You'll notice not applicable is there under K for reading emergent text because we don't actually expect them to be reading books until second semester for kindergarten. And then the last thing I would mention is when teachers were able or teams were able to create their own report cards originally, that meant made for some very lengthy report cards. Some of our report cards are 3 to 5 pages long. Our teachers would like to be able to, on a regular basis, send home the report cards at the end of each 9 weeks. But you can imagine the expense of copying 3 to 5 pages for 700 students. So another goal that we had was to make it a front and back report card. So it would be just using one piece of paper, should we decide to go with a sending home a paper version. So that was something that we was a priority for us as well. So I think that's all. Any questions for me?
While you're up there, reporting out for the Academic Advisory Committee, myself and Tula, with Karen as the facilitator of the committee, she had the main section, and that's the report card. Updating the improvement plan. As you recall, we needed to get our goals reset because we reached our two goals we had set prior to. So that's been accomplished. The last one was the environmental goal. There's still a piece hanging out there that needs to be addressed, and that has to do with the teacher and staff environment. We focused in on the student environment. One example of how you address that is teacher attendance. Is it an incentive or is it a hammer? And that was kind of a conversation. What's unique about that committee, it's made up of administration and teachers, and we have a very good conversation. So it's very open and candid. It's not like a negotiation. We're trying to figure out how we want to proceed. That was kind of put on the shelf, good way of putting that, Karen. So that's to be addressed later. One thing that was not, historically, the TBT cycles, we've had 8, and now we're looking at making that a percentage of the standards being addressed because, how would you put this, Karen?
In Master Connect, right.
But the issue that we're saying was some folks were doing 8 cycles and might be on one standard each, eight standards, whereas other folks were doing 5 or 6 standards on one cycle, so they were doing a lot more. So when you looked at it in a graphic form, some buildings looked like they weren't doing very many, or addressing very many standards. Others were doing a lot. So the idea that Karen threw out was a percentage of the standards should be addressed instead of just saying 8 cycles. So very good idea, and I think that's going to help quite a bit to get teachers to address more standards in those cycles. So I don't know, Tula, if there's anything else you wanted to.
I think you covered the major areas that we discussed.
For 2018-2019.
Would you
do a follow-up on these?
Yes.
Yeah. So I would like to
see one
filled out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And something I should mention is, I forgot to mention is, prior to the convening of that committee, Morgan, as part of her internship, did do a parent survey about the report cards we currently had, and we used some of that information as well in the construction.
I like this format.
Great.
Treasurer's report.
I have my 5-year forecast update. This is the required update that the state requires. We file our original 5-year forecast in October, and then it's required to be updated at least once in May as a mandatory filing. So this is that update. I'm going to walk you through the notes and as well as to present the forecast to be filed in May. I know it's small. I'll do my best here. As you know, on the forecast, we have different line items for revenue and expenditures, and it's pertinent to the general fund only. It lists 3 years of historical data, so you have 2015, 16, and 17, and then we have the forecasted data. So I'm going to try and focus on the forecasted data. That way I can kind of zoom in on that for you. You have, starting on line one, you have our general property tax revenues. That's our real estate tax. You have our tangible personal property tax, so that has been eliminated. That's why you see that as zero. That's now included any remaining up in the general property tax for real estate. You'll have a line there for income tax when that's certified. You have our unrestricted state grants. That's the $5,043,000 there. That's the our foundation funding. And then you have the restricted state grants. That's our another portion of our foundation funding, specific to career tech and economically disadvantaged funding. Below that, you have property tax allocation. That's homestead rollback amounts. And then you have all other revenues, which would be like open enrollment, would be one of the biggest ones there. Moving on down through and expenditures, the $7.9 million. That is 2018, that's this current year. That's salaries. And then you have benefits, which would be retirement, health insurance, Medicare, followed by purchase service, and then supplies and materials, and finally capital improvements or capital outlay for the $59,000, and then other objects. The $69,000 there, which is for total other finance, that's transfers out. That's transfers from the general fund. What that is our 024 account, where we used to do that transfer for the health insurance, as well as the flexible spending account, that if you take our health insurance, the contract stipulates that you receive $325 towards a flexible spending account. So that's the board share of that, is roughly $50,000. And then the amount over that $50,000 in just this year is for whatever was remaining and how we process the health insurance. We don't do it that way anymore. But there was a small amount remaining from starting off the year that way. So that's why you see that there. And then the next line there is our excess revenues over or under. So that's our revenues over or under expenditures. You can see we've been deficit spending. And levy aside, the new income tax levy aside, we continue to do so. However, we'll move on down to through. We have our beginning and ending cash balances. $110,000 is our outstanding encumbrances that we estimate, and then $540,000 is our budget reserve that the board established, leaving us with an ending cash balance for 2018 of $2,008,915. If you move to the right, you see that's the beginnings of our income tax, the $100,000 followed by the $1,967,000 that the state certified. And then we grew that somewhat, and I'll explain that in the notes here in a minute. But if you take that into account, you see our ending balance, unencumbered balance at the very bottom. Now we have a positive balance throughout all 5 years of the forecast, which is something we haven't had in quite some time. So that's just a real quick down through the lines on the forecast itself. I want to pull up the notes and kind of explain a couple, explain the pieces. The assumptions that make up these numbers. What I've done here is it's the original October notes, and I've highlighted the changes and stricken out the old language in red. The residential millage amounts changed based on our amounts and rates coming in December after the filing of the October forecast. So you see that went from 20.06 to 21.04. Our effective millage went up slightly. We still have the lowest effective millage in Madison County. The other piece, we renewed our PI levy for an additional 5 years. It used to be from 2013 through 2018. Now it's 2017. Now it's 2017. For an additional 5 years beginning in 2018. So we renewed that. It's been updated to reflect that. which again, that's just for informational purposes only. The PI levy is outside of the general fund, but it's just to kind of give you a full picture of our levy picture. I'm not going to read down through line by line. I assume you've done that. But I will point out the changes. It used to say, with the update in 2017, we expect modest gains in residential values. That did happen. But offsetting declining values in ag values due to CAUV formula adjustments are expected to result, and that did happen also. However, our expected result was an estimated 0.25% overall increase. The new language says roughly the same thing. However, the adjustment had a slightly greater impact than originally anticipated, resulting in an estimated 0.04% decrease to the tune of around $27,000 in property tax collected for 2018, and a revised estimate of a 2% decrease, or $130,000 in 2019, and then another 2% in 2020. That's that three-year CAUV reduction implementation taking effect. And the reason it's larger in 19 and 20 is because we don't have the increase in the residential due to an update that we had in 18. So those next 2 years, the values will take the full brunt of that adjustment in CAUV. So it should cause that amount to go down. Moving on, our income tax, when it does come in, will be reflected in line 1.03. But it hasn't been certified yet, and I'll get to that down at the bottom here. So our state foundation payments, again, I spoke to that earlier. That's the amount we receive from the state, our state funding. We are a guaranteed district. That means we receive the same amount we received last year. We expected the transitional aid guarantee, and it was listed at this beginning in October at $746,000. Right now, with the most recent foundation funding, and it's based on enrollment changes and but we're at $570,000 on the guarantee. So we're still on the guarantee to the tune of over $500,000, but it has been updated slightly. Any increases in the foundation funding are due to additional aid items outside of the guarantee calculation, which are minimal. That's like special education fund, transportation funding, preschool funding. It doesn't make up a material amount. Our restricted grants and aid, again, that's our career tech and our economically disadvantaged funding. That's been essentially flat as well. It hasn't been updated, same as what it was in October. Rollback and homestead has been the same, hasn't been updated. Our other revenue, we did have a lot of changes here. So I am going to have to read through these. The highlighted area. There were quite a few unexpected and significant additions to this line, including a $10,000 donation for athletic training services, a $6,188 increase in district wellness program rebate received, a $4,556 increase in insurance proceeds due to property damage from strong winds, a $1,000 increase in interest received due to better than expected rates of return, an increase of $99,134 in tuition received from other districts due to an increased number of foster place students, and finally an increase of $115,233 in fiscal year 2018, which is estimated to continue to be $45,000 annually thereafter due to the enterprise zone agreement with the Village of Mount Sterling. Finally, as a result of the board-approved budget reduction plan, a pay-to-participate fee has been added for fiscal year 2019 for athletics and band in the amount of $100 per activity per season with a $200 maximum per season per family cap. Should say cap there. I will make that correction. This fee is expected to generate $25,000 annually to offset the cost of extracurricular activities paid by the general fund. So that's listed there because that's where those funds will be deposited, isn't in the general fund. It will help offset that cost. Before I move on, does anybody have any questions with those items there? Those are all unexpected areas that we saw increased revenue. We didn't expect it in October. They were out of the ordinary, which is why they're in other revenue for the most part. but that's why we have the May update. We're able to update for those amounts. But as we've been trending along in our spending plan, a lot of these items here are why we were above our estimates in a lot of our areas.
Do you anticipate the foster placement of students is going to continue?
That's really a hard one to judge. It fluctuates quite a bit. We did like a three-year average and set it at 50,000, and it came in at around $150,000 this year. So that's how much we were off in that estimate. And that was a lot of foster placed students out of, I believe, like Franklin County. They were placed in our school district, that then their resident district, the funding comes to us. So they're court placements, so we don't dictate. There's no real choice in the matter for the student or the families, or the districts for that matter. So we just kind of do the best we can with it. We try to go off averages, and then if we notice a big spike, we account for it in updates like this. So I wish I could say, yeah, we're going to keep receiving that $150,000, but I really can't say. I'm not sure. The one that we can expect to continue to receive is the Mount Sterling Enterprise Zone Agreement. That one, you remember, getting updated a while back. Mount Sterling has done a good job getting things together there in the village, and part of that was getting this agreement back current. That's why we received a larger amount in 2018. They're current now. And moving forward, they will just continue to pay us the annual amount per the agreement. Okay, if there are any other questions there? The income tax. This is where it's currently reflected in the forecast, line 13.01. A 1.25% earned income tax was placed on the ballot for May 8, 2018 election, which is anticipated to generate a minimum of $1,967,166 per year once it reaches full collection, based on estimates from the Ohio Department of Taxation. We only expect to collect a partial amount in the first year, fiscal year 2019, based on income tax collection timelines. That's where we talk about that 18 months to full collection. Additionally, we expect the collected amount to increase an estimated 2% per year based on a five-year average of income data provided by the Ohio Department of Taxation. So the Ohio Department of Taxation actually is part of this setting the certified amount that we could expect to collect, provided us with salary data as well for our district as well as statewide. And a five-year average it has increased roughly 2% per year. So as wages increase, the amount we collect increases. Alternatively, as wages go down, we would collect less also. But using that five-year average, that's why you see that amount going in the forecast from $1,967,000 to $2,006,000 and $2,046,000. And again, that's why we were comfortable with asking for an earned income tax rate that would generate slightly less than the $2 million that was asked for in the August election, because we knew that the income tax had the potential to grow. So we would collect what the district needed to remain solvent through the forecast with that amount. Do you have any questions on the income tax as it's presented in the forecast right now? Okay. The reason it's there is because it hasn't been certified yet. The election results haven't been certified. As you know, we've tentatively won that election by around 27 votes, I believe. Is that the most recent information we have?
Yeah.
27 votes.
Scratch it off.
Yeah. Yeah. So it looks like it will be certified in the district's favor, which is good. Moving on to expenditures, this is an area that also saw some changes. And I'll just hit the high points here. The memorandum of agreement was reached with both associations to extend the current 1 year, to extend the contract, current 1 year through fiscal year 19. As part of the aforementioned memorandum of agreement, a 0% increase has been projected for fiscal year 19. It used to say we projected a 1% increase for 2019 through 2022. Since we have a 0% in for 2019, that's been changed to 2020 through 2022. As part of the same language there for the OPSI, for the classified youth. So the one speaks to NPA and the other one speaks to OPSI. Step increases again stay at 1.85%. Those were unchanged. savings through attrition and turnover. We have that estimate in there that remained unchanged. It could fluctuate somewhat. Additional savings through the attrition of three positions, the reduction of three aides, and the reduction of $28,000 in supplemental contracts resulted in an overall additional annual savings of $352,000 included in this forecast. So that wasn't in the October forecast. That's part of the budget balancing plan approved by the board. Retirement and insurance benefits. We did have a larger than anticipated increase in insurance. A larger than anticipated increase of 9% will be realized in fiscal year 2019. A 9% increase is also estimated for fiscal year 2020, but the estimate returns to 8% in fiscal years 2021 and 2022. Ideally, that's less than 8% in those 2 years, but that's our conservative estimate that we use in all years of the forecast where we don't know, is that 8%. We hadn't had a large increase in the last few years. Our increases have been roughly 2%, 0%, and 5% for our health insurance. So having this 9% now shouldn't have been all that much of a surprise, I guess. What was good about this is through our HRA management, the actual health insurance that was presented for the traditional plan, the high deductible plan, was 12%. And we were able to use our resources to reduce the amount contributed to the HRA so that the overall plan only increased 9%. So we bought down that percentage increase. So looking, since we're going to have to bump that HRA contribution probably back up a little bit next year, and the insurance rate will probably come down, it won't be 12%. That's why we look at the same 9% for 2020 also. So we've kind of smoothed out that big spike that we saw in an insurance increase over 2 years, as opposed to absorbing that large increase in 1 year. So that's the benefits of having local control over our own HRA funding mechanism that we didn't have before. So that choice has continued to pay off for the district and save us money, but also save employees avoiding a 12% increase as opposed to a 9%, which is still high, but it'll get better, I believe, over the next few years. The other language is just updating that for the memorandum of agreement that extends for one more year now under the current contract. Purchase services. What changed here as a result of the board approved budget reduction plan and memorandum of agreement with Madison Plains Education Association, $59,000 in tuition reimbursement will be eliminated from fiscal year 2019. Again, that's $50,000 for the MPA Association and $9,000 that the board reduced for the administrative tuition reimbursement. Also, reductions in superintendent professional development and services will save an additional $20,000 annually beginning fiscal year 2019. So that's the reduction in professional development and the communications piece of the reduction plan. That's where it shows up is in purchase services there. So that's where tuition reimbursements shows up. Supplies and materials. Again, as part of the board approved budget reduction plan, curriculum resources will be reduced $30,000 annually beginning in fiscal year 19. It shows up here in supplies and materials. Also, due to an increase in student fees, we anticipate an additional annual savings of $6,000. That's where the student fee was raised, K-6, from $45 to $70. That'll be an increased amount being brought into the student fee fund, which will pay for more supplies then out of that fund, which will take the burden off of the general fund, that $6,000. So that's how that matriculates its way into the general fund. Capital outlay, you see there we had stricken out and frozen. We have frozen it there for the remainder of years of the forecast. That's because we used to have it frozen at $63,450. As part of the budget balancing plan again, beginning with fiscal year 2019, this amount will be reduced to zero, shifting the entirety of these purchases to the permanent improvement fund. So that's where we've reduced that $63,000 completely and shifted everything to the permanent improvement fund. Those are the all the updates in their entirety. So does anybody have any questions over the forecast and the notes? If not, I'd like to show you one more thing. And that's what the draft forecast would look like when you move the income tax up into you know, quote-unquote above the line up into the revenue area and take it from the new levy area. And the reason I wanted to put it there is because I wanted to point out what it does to our deficit spending that we had been experiencing. So this line 6.01, excess revenues and other financing sources, now you see the effect that has. Of course, in 19, we only have a very small partial collection, so you're still deficit spending. However, in 2020, we have positive revenue of $284,000. 2021, $10,745, and we don't project to start deficit spending again until 2022. And that's when, you know, we said we would have to re-examine our revenue options or see what funding and expenditure issues have changed up to that point. So what that does is to give, again, speaking to Mr. Morlock, talking about the 10-year forecast, the 5-year forecast is also valuable because that lets us see when we start to deficit spend again. So you can start making those either programming choice decisions or expenditure decisions or revenue decisions early, because if one of the goals is not to have deficit spending, we can see that coming now, just like we've seen it coming in other projections we've had with the 10-year plan and the other 5-year forecasts. So again, it doesn't change our ending balance. We still have a positive balance in 5 years there at the end of the forecast, $932,646, and that's a projection. So things can change, but again, first time in a long time that we've had 5 years forecasted in the black, which is a good thing. So very long time, very good thing. So, and I personally like to take the opportunity to thank the public for supporting that levy. It absolutely does great things for Madison Plains and the students of Madison Plains. It really does. So, if there's nothing else. The only other thing I have are my financial reports, nothing really to report there out of the ordinary. I will point out that the amount included in the spending plan currently contains the October forecast amount still. So that'll be updated moving forward in June with whatever is approved here tonight. And also you can expect to receive amended appropriations and estimated resources at the June meeting, as well as any end of year transfers we might have. So that will be coming up in the June. Questions for me.
Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
I think I should have said it earlier. We've been a little self-conscious because the results have not been certified yet. You mentioned 21. The other six come from Fayette and Franklin County's combination of a net of six. There's a certain number of provisional ballots out there, so that's why we haven't declared victory. Nonetheless, we very much appreciate roughly 1,000 people that supported it, and even the people that didn't, which is roughly 1,000 people that didn't support it. We appreciate everybody getting involved, everybody asking questions, and we felt like it was a successful process, and we want to continue that. I believe Madison Plains can be a force for good in our entire community, and that's for everybody, people with kids in the school, people that want the property values to go up, people that just want to educate people, kids in their community. So, for whatever reason, if you voted for it or you voted against it, we're still here. We want to communicate with you, and we want to be a force for good. But that's why we're not necessarily saying we won yet, because we want those results to be certified.
Right. What really gave us the trepidation, I guess, to celebrate was initially we had a number of 38 provisional ballots that were still out there, which, of course, is greater than our 27 margin of victory. It still had to be counted. Since then, we've received some information from the Board of Elections that says that that number may be as low as 21 or 27, somewhere around that area. So 21, I believe, so less than our margin of victory. So even if all of those were to come in against the levy, it should still carry. So that's why I have a little more confidence in putting it in the forecast, even as a new levy item, even though it can't be up there until it's forecasted in the revenue section. I'm glad to present it now, at least it's part of the forecast in some way.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnekus?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. The first item, we've got several things I'm going to report out on. Some expenditures from the PI fund. Mr. Coburn appropriately asked a question this morning about the budget, and Todd and I went back through and made sure it was updated for the most recent numbers. But you see here, fiscal years 15, 16, and 17 are the actual numbers for our PI fund, and broken out by the operational unit where it was spent. Fiscal year 18, you see our budgeted amounts, and in fiscal year 18, the far right in the gray is the actual to date what we've spent. So we budget $778,000. We will not spend that. The anticipated expenditures remaining, and some of these items will go over, but we have engineering fees we'll talk about, sewage plant costs we'll talk about, which will be coming out of the building and the site improvement numbers. And then the biggest one is a bus replacement. And as I will go down through here, you'll see. But I wanted to make sure you understood where we're at, where we stand with the PI fund currently. It's critical because there's a lot of big expenditures that we make at this time of year going into the next school year. So it's good timing for us to review that. Again, Todd and I both looked at this, so he's vetted as well. So any questions on that? We just haven't looked at this particular document in a long time. The financials Todd presents always has this information in it, but this is broken out in more detail.
Quick question for you. Has there ever been a discussion? Obviously, we just got done talking about our five-year forecast, and we talked about a budget reserve. And as part of our budget reduction proposal, we talked about shifting the capital outlay costs from our general fund to our PI fund. Because we look at these numbers that we're talking about, you know, roughly 778 for this year, with other projects in play, in addition to the sewer project, the bus, or the classroom furniture, you know, those costs are adding up where there's going to be a difference of only about $100,000, give or take. So has there been a discussion of having a reserve in that fund in case an emergency happens? And, you know, my understanding of the board in the past has been against, you know, loans or anything else. So with our general fund as tight as it is, and with the projects that we're discussing in the future board and superintendent for the PI fund, I think it's beneficial to have some type of nest egg there in case of rainy day or emergency, instead of planning to spend everything.
It's a great point. There's two issues there. One is within each one of these, there's usually a miscellaneous that's just a placeholder for funds. And two, we don't budget the whole amount. We try to get close because a few years ago, one thing we talked about was spend this money because we don't want to be chastised for building a big war chest of funds.
Correct.
But to your point, we never budget all of it for that oopsie daisy that comes along.
Because roughly,
so it's right there.
Yeah.
We have a reserve.
We're only generating, what, 400 some thousand a year?
No, it's actually about 375, 380,000. Okay. Yeah.
So 375, 380.
But you had carryover balance, and that's why you see
right. That's why you see the up and down right. A lot of times. So.
Yep. And for those that don't know in the audience, the way the process works for as far as how we spend dollars, the Board of Education appropriates funds at the fund level. Okay, so you basically say PI fund, you can spend X dollars this year. That's broken down within fund accounts that the treasurer says, "Yep, there's money's available there, Tim." And then I say, yeah, that's an appropriate expense for what we want to spend the money on. I can't just go spend what I want, and Todd can't spend what he wants. You govern us with the appropriations. So I want to make sure that, because there have been a lot of questions, folks wondering how that process works, and it's been a while since we've kind of reviewed that.
But. Right, right. And it even goes down to a finer level at the building level and the department level, you know, where those budgets are created with input from those buildings and departments, just like they will be going into next year. And then those building and department administrators work within those budgets while seeking Tim and I's approval each time the requisition is processed. So they receive their budgeted amounts, but even then,
you know, that's not a blank check. It still goes through the approval process for Tim and myself. But Tim's absolutely right. I tell the superintendent and the board what's available, and he sets the direction on what programs and areas to spend the funds on. And as long as it's legal and we have the funds available, I sign off on that, and the superintendent sets the direction. So it's expensive.
Your opportunity for this budget in particular is coming up soon. As we establish the budgets for next year, that's when you'll look at this. And Mr. Coburn's point of, well, maybe we want to identify a reserve within that fund, that's the opportune time to take a look at doing that.
Right. There are areas set aside where you see the budget reserve and the encumbrances for a capital outlay reserve within the general fund if you wanted to set aside a reserve there. But the reserve, the PI fund itself is a reserve. So having the O3 fund is a reserve in itself because it can only be spent on those items. But moving into the next budget cycle, you know, if we see deficit spending and the board, you know, wants to avoid that, that's the time we can say we want to reduce the amount of available appropriation for the superintendent to work within. And that's where you would make that decision. And then the administration would be forced to work within whatever amount the board is allotted.
That's good that we keep that out there just for everybody, so that they realize that we're good stewards of their money and that they can see that. So if that's updated on your treasurer's page on, I don't know, quarterly basis or something, right? Even the
we have our, I mean, our, as part of our financial reports and our spending plans that are included in the board docs and the agendas, all of that is out there and publicly available. As far as a workflow, you know, we don't necessarily have a workflow on how those monies are allocated and spent.
Yeah.
That's something, you know, we could do an educational piece and put something like that out there.
Because I think we have to keep that momentum that we have going of people saying, well, what are you spending on? And when we explain it, we talk about what the funds are for, and I think that we have those conversations that are honest and open and transparent. That helps with both sides, right? So the community understands, and we are clear on what they want. So then we just keep the dialogue going, is what I'm saying.
I think that the fact that the board and the administration has a concerted effort towards being transparent, even though we feel that we are, that we're always trying to be more transparent, is why the performance audit recognizes that we do a great job at that. So I agree. I think we continue to do that and build that momentum and support.
Real quick, to Kelly's point, when we were for the PI levy, you know, you put out those reports of where the money went. So
yeah, that's still out there.
So I think we should update that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was talking about.
Keep that,
sorry,
yeah, and put it out there. Yeah. Not just stop it once the levy passes.
Right.
Just keep that flow of information.
Yep.
The other piece in the budget management process that governs you as a board is the forecast. When you go to set your appropriations, if you want to exceed that, he's going to tell you no, you can't. Anyhow, that's the PI budget where we stand right now. Now, moving on from that, the sewage treatment plant. As we talked about the last meeting, we've got a lot of work that we have to get done out there before school starts next year. The plans were submitted to the EPA. They've initially rejected the plan. That's not a scary thing like I first thought. I met with our operator. I've called the EPA, talked to them directly. You've seen the letter, Julia, who sent the letter. She's like, well, yeah, we always have edits and changes that have to be done. And I said, well, this is pretty significant. You know, you're basically rejecting our plan. I listened to her advice. What we've done from there is we've gone back to the engineer who originally designed the plan. Our plan was designed in 2007, so it's old. And that's the number one reason they rejected it. They didn't like the idea of a new engineer stamping an old plan. And that's what had happened, because J.R. Ross is the company that we're going to be working with to install it. We used their engineer. EPA said, we don't really like that. So we went back to McCarty and Associates. They're updating the plan right now. I talked to the gentleman there today, and he said, I should have that done very quickly for you. Talked to J.R. Mason. The job from order to install is 30 days. And so right now our target is the month of June, which gives us, in the event something goes wrong, rain or whatever, we got July as well. So that's our game plan right now. We've relayed all that information back to Julia at the EPA, and she said, you're fine, as long as we know you're working on the project. So My goal is to have the plan to the EPA next week. She said it'd only take them a few days to approve it if everything is fine. They get it back to us. I get it out to J.R. Mason, and then they can order everything. So that's kind of where the sewage treatment plant lies. By having McCarty come back in and redo the plans, it's an additional $1,200. We thought originally it'd be about $5,000, so I was very pleased with that number. And as you saw from our PI, the professional services line, we spent $300 out of our $16,000 budget, so we're okay there. So I was pretty pleased with that, and we're going to have new plans. So. Yep.
What's the increased cost on the project?
As of right now, talking to J.R. Mason, they said if the plan as updated comes back and it's the same, and according to McCarty, they feel it's going to be the same. He said you'll have no increase in cost to the project. I said, great. He said, now, if they come back and they want something added, there'll be additional cost, and I'll relay that back to you guys then.
So you're referencing the plan, but this letter that is attached here talks about our system design. Is that two separate things, or?
No, it's the same thing. When you talk to the EPA, they say your plan that you submitted. There's an application as part of your plan. What's your plan to address the situation at the sewage treatment plant? There's an application that you have to file with the EPA, and they're saying the design is the issue because it's, one, an old design, and two, they're saying the flow that we submitted and the design, that being the ultraviolet light system, was not sufficient to deal with the flow. The flow that they're looking at is incorrect, according to our engineer. He said they're basically taking the flow for an 8-hour period and multiplying by 3. And you don't do that in school districts. And our engineer does these all the time. So I feel pretty confident about that. That's where he said, no, she's looking at it as like a business that's open 24 hours a day. And you guys are not. He said, I'll deal with that. I said, okay. So I'm pretty, this guy, Lauren is his name now, McCarty Associates, he's very well versed on this. So I feel pretty comfortable with that. Talked to him today and he said, no, I'll get that right back to you. So I feel good about that. So.
Your conversations with her put us in good stead with the 30-day thing in that letter.
Yeah, my concern was May 17th. Was the 30 days, and she said, "No, all I need to know is that you're working on it." I just put a hold on it. I said, "That's all I need to know. I don't want any fines or penalties." She said, "No, as long as you're working on it." I said, "Call Lorna McCarty." She said, "I'm going to as soon as we get off the phone." So they check up on it. So I felt pretty good about that.
I wanted to talk into the microphone.
I'm sorry, I keep...
You keep turning.
Any other questions on the treatment plan? The classroom furniture order, we were given a copy of that. That's a July 1 PO. That's for next year's PI fund. That's we always budget $80,000. We have for a number of years now. The cost is $68,000 for next year's order. Again, that outfits four classrooms. Okay. It also orders the chairs for the high school. So that finishes out our high school chairs that we need. If you remember, we've been buying 100 a year every year. That's the last set. So, and we stayed within budget for the order this year that we received already. Sorry?
The ramp.
Oh, that's right. There's also a ramp that we are buying for the stage. We have handicapped student this year, and we'll have them next year, so we need to have a ramp for them to be able to come up on the stage, and we'll have that. So, okay, good about that. Bus purchase. We have our second bus for the year that is sitting on the lot at the bus manufacturer's place, just waiting for us to order it. We are trading in 5 of the buses per the recommendation of the performance auditors, getting about $6,600. So not a lot of money, but it offsets and brings us down to about, I think it's $85,000. So we are within our remaining budget from the PI to take care of that. And I just wanted to bring that to the board, make sure we don't have any heartburn over ordering that bus.
They said it was a lot more, right?
The
traded.
Oh yeah. Well, if you discontinue maintaining.
Yeah, they were building in the cost of maintaining those buses, which they had a formula for, which they hadn't been on the road, so there was really no maintaining to be done. So that was one of the performance audit we all said was great. There were some things that we just kind of, questioned.
How many buses will that leave us on our spare fleet?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to check the list. I'm sorry.
Not much.
Yeah. Okay, that's the bus purchase. Exterior cameras. I've been meeting with Cody and Brian to talk about facilities. And one of the suggestions that Cody made is he found a way for us to get better exterior cameras that give us a better shot and a wider shot. He's installed almost all of them already, very, very cheaply. I think it was $150 a camera. And so kudos to Cody for bringing that to my attention and for getting those installed. It does help. I can clearly see many aspects of the parking lot that we couldn't see before. So hopefully that will help us in safeguarding our facility. HVAC issues. Brian reminded me of this today. It was already on here, but we do have John Collette from CNS working again on our high school HVAC system. John worked on it for many years with Larry Kimbler. Right now, one of the chillers is not functioning at full capacity. They are working hard to get it working at full capacity. I believe Kelly was up there yesterday. The gym is probably the coolest room, and that's a good thing. We need that for next week.
Yes.
But they're working feverishly to see if there's anything else they can do for the rest of the facility, because even with the gym being cooler, everybody else in that commons, it'll get hot very quickly if it's not at full capacity. The auditorium is already very hot. So they are working hard to get that taken care of. Again, it's a very old system that very few people will work on for us. John has for a long time. We used a few other vendors, but we went back to John because he immediately knew what the issue was. We hope that he doesn't have to replace a chiller. It could be between $5,000 and $7,000, but that's your oopsie daisy money you're talking about. You just can't. You can't budget for everything. That's why you got to keep some of it back. The transportation office operations update. I've been meeting with the staff down there at least one day per week since, well, it's been about a month now. We've issued the remaining supplementals for this year. We've issued the supplementals for next year. If you're unaware of how that process works, there's a seniority list that you flow through. That's a very, it's a sacred cow, the bus drivers. They're very attached to that list because that's their seniority, gives them rights, and we have to follow through on that, and we do. We recently had a trip that we just put out there. It wasn't posted enough, and so we bid it out, so we had to redo it because they said, hey, I didn't know about that job. But my point is, we're working with them. They just let me know, hey, you got to let the rest of us know about it, and we did. We redid the job, and everybody was fine with it. So that's just that good communication we have to have with them. We are going to make it through the rest of the year with our current setup. That being a driver working in between their runs as a dispatcher with Miss Patty down as the aide. I've been asked repeatedly, what are we going to do? We'll make a decision, I assume, sometime in June as to what we're going to do with that transportation coordinator's position, because that's a position that's hotly talked about right now. So we'll need to make a decision on that as well. Intermediate as a voting site upgrade. I did call out the Board of Elections this afternoon to talk to them about that. They said that the only issue they had was, they said that we assumed that all of your electrical outlets at the intermediate gym worked. I said, you probably should have talked to Matt Mason, and he'd tell you that they do not work. I said, a building that's that old, I'm glad we have a few that work in that gym, actually. We try to keep everything up and running, but he pointed that out. I said, we'll work on that for next year, but he said everything else was perfect. Our staff had everything set up for them, accommodated them. The sheriff was here and did a really nice job. So he was very pleased with our setup. While I had him on the phone, I did ask him about the provisionals. He said his count for everything was 21. Now he said I don't have any other provisionals anywhere else or absentees or anything else. I'm at 21. And he said, unless somebody brings in a boatload more, that's where you're at. And he said, you passed. He said, but we will not certify that, he said, until officially the 29th.
Correct.
So that's where we're at right now, is that holding pattern. So I agree with you, Mark. It's kind of temper the celebration until we have, you know, some certification from them.
Is there any traffic flow issues?
No, and he actually said, surprisingly, he said we had no issues at all. And I said, well, to be quite honest, we've worked on that flow for a long time. And our parents are very well versed on how that flow goes. So really all you had to deal with was your traffic coming into our facility. And the sheriff did a really nice job of recognizing folks that were kind of looking for a place to park. And Brad did a nice job of giving more spots than they asked for. Over in front of the Centric Academy, we cleaned that all out over there so people could come in and really had a lot of spaces to park. So it worked well.
And the plan is to continue.
Yeah.
That move.
Yeah, he was excited about being here the next time. So I probably should have told him that we'll charge him the next time. About the amount that we got charged for August. But anyhow.
That's a great amount.
For August. Anyhow, building security updates. Other things we've done, like I said, Cody put in some new cameras on the outside. We've also installed interior cameras outside of our restrooms. I'd like to think that that's had some impact on curbing the graffiti that's been put on our walls. We had some other graffiti put on the walls not too long ago. I won't get into detail of what that was because it was disgusting. It was not a threat to the district. It was in the bathroom. We took care of that. But again, what happens in the bathroom, we don't know. So kids currently, and this is kind of an update on our what we're doing to address things. Currently, Dr. Unger has two restrooms open up in the facility, and those are the two restrooms just off the commons. And he has aides sitting outside. The kids have to sign in and sign out to go into the restroom. So as we see kids going in and out, we can go in sporadically and see, okay, is there any damage, anything going on, and we can identify who put graffiti on the wall if they did. That has eliminated the threats being written on the wall. So we feel pretty good about that. Doesn't mean it won't happen again, but for now, it has not happened since we went to that model. In regards to, just following on that number 10, the threats, the bomb threats that were made. We had bomb threats, we had a gun threat, we had lots of different threats. At no time did we have any credible evidence to say they were valid. I said that in my one calls, and I meant that in my one calls. If I thought there was a credible threat, I would not say it. And I wanted to make sure that the community at least knew we had no information said it was credible. We worked hand in hand with the Sheriff's Department on each instance. They sent out an investigator every time. They spoke to us, they spoke to any students we could identify. They worked, I have to say the Sheriff's Office has spent a tremendous amount of time on this, trying to eliminate this problem. As far as what we've done, I know Dr. Unger and Mrs. Berger and his entire staff have interviewed student after student after student. The issue you've run into, and we have run into, is we had a lot of, I heard, this kid told me they heard it from that kid. We did not hear from one student say, I heard that kid say they did it. Not one time. So for us to be able to pin this on any one student and to address it, we've been unable to do that. The closest we came is we had a student that claimed another student was threatening them, saying they were going to say they did it. So that's the closest we've come. It's very frustrating on our part. As far as shutting down school, I agree with you 100%. It's the worst thing that we can do. Believe it or not, I don't like doing it in the wintertime either, because that's what we're paid to do, is have kids here and educate them. Our challenge was, we were late on a Sunday and we had a lot of feedback where a lot of people were just downright scared. And so we closed on that Monday. The next time that we had a threat in response to that, that's when we had the sheriff come out, we had the bomb squad come out. We made sure that if we were gonna have kids here, they were gonna be safe. We could not guarantee that for that Monday. So I appreciate your idea and your volunteerism, and that's something we might think about in the future. But that's what happened in these scenarios. So I don't know if there's anything else you want me to expand on that.
Not on the school security necessarily, but the man doors and the which we're getting if you go in.
Yep, will do.
As far as security updates to our buildings, right now what we're looking at doing is the intermediate cafeteria door. Most people don't realize, as you drive back here to the baseball field, the intermediate cafeteria door faces that drive. It's a wooden door with three glass panels. They're not security glass, never have been. That's an original door back there. So truthfully, they could lock it, but it's not gonna keep anybody out. So I'm just being candid with you. We're going to replace that door. The cost right now is $1,200, because you don't just put on a home door. It'll be a solid metal frame, solid metal door. So that's one of the doors we're gonna replace. The pod doors up at the high school. For $9,121, we can put doors on those pod rooms, okay? So we're looking at doing that as well, and that would be a summer project. Again, that would fall into the budget for this next year. That'd be a July 1. The elementary fire door closers. There's an issue down here with these fire door closers. They are not cheap because they're automatics. If there's a fire, they release and make those doors shut. That's $1,992. We need to replace those. So altogether, you're looking at about $12,000, $13,000 for those doors. Now, you say, well, we've got the main entryways, man traps. As we see it, and working with Brian, working with the door companies, they basically said, if you're not gonna put holes in your block walls going, for example, the high school front door, you'd have to put, where the man trap already is, you'd have to put a hole into block wall to go into the office and then come out, because right now you already have a man trap. All you have to do is put security bars on those doors if you want to do it. We were looking at actually putting another set of doors there. That doesn't give you anything. It doesn't help. The other thing we looked at was the back doors of the high school, putting a man trap back there if we wanted to do that. You're getting into a much higher level of cost, and I think we need to have a deeper discussion with the sheriff's expert who agreed to walk through our facilities for that piece. We also looked at man doors for in front of the intermediate building over here. Same situation. You really don't have a way of, right now, currently the secretaries see who it is, ask, you know, who are you, and they buzz them in. Well, right now they could buzz them in to the man trap that's there, and we could put locks on that, but there's nobody to come out and check. You see what I mean? There's no way to walk them through the office. And if you've been in any new school buildings, they come in and they're forced to go through the office to get checked in. That building is not laid out for that. You'd literally have to have them come through Brad's office and the man door he has coming in there, and then walk through his office, through the entire office. It's just not set up appropriately. So we have to do a much more in-depth facility plan if we want to do those type of man traps. I don't want us to throw money into something that really adds no value as far as security goes. So I want to get these done. The pod doors, the biggest challenge with the pod doors, they will add a layer of security. But again, I remind us, those doors or walls are a lot like these walls. They're just very thin walls, okay? So it will help. It will give the teachers a way of closing the door and locking that door. But if somebody wanted in there, it's not like this door, okay, because the wall is not as heavy over there. Those are portable walls. So they're going to try with this pricing to secure it to the girders that run above the ceiling, so you've got some more stability to it. They won't be able to just pull the wall open anymore, okay, but it's still not a permanent wall. So that's the pricing for doors, and we can have further discussion on that, especially for the man traps. But for these doors, I'd really like to get moving on those. And if we have funds available within, I'd like to get moving on those and green light that. So if there's no issues with the board, we have the funds. It's just, it's a new expense. Anything over $10,000, I'm responsible for relating to the board president.
We can discuss it right now.
Thank you. Gotta get it done.
And the ones that you're still thinking about, definitely before you leave, report back to us. We can go around with those.
Okay. Yeah, the man traps are going to, like I said, it's going to require somebody with a higher level of expertise than what we have here. It's going to require, you know, the sheriff volunteered. He has somebody that can come out and walk through our buildings and give us some insight and tell us what we need to do. And I think they're going to walk through and say, if you put a man trap in here, it's not going to help you, especially at the high school front. There's just nowhere to route people through.
camera on that front door that the secretaries can see who's at the front door? I didn't think there was a camera there or not.
They get buzzed in.
Well, I know you get buzzed in. I just didn't know if they had a camera under.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That's
you
one of
the. Tim, about the other pods or man traps or anything else, the more expensive projects. I mentioned it casually before the meeting, but with House Bill 318, I would encourage everyone to contact Bobby Hackett, who's our senator. It's passed through the House of Representatives. That basically sets up a state program for established standardized testing or training for school resource officers, and also establishes a line item in the state budget of $10 million to go specifically for high schools, elementaries, for school security upgrades. Not saying that we're eligible, we don't know until we try, but I think it's something that we should try, but the Senate has to pass it first. So they're scheduled to vote on it, I think, early next week.
All right, well, I will go ahead and direct Brian to at least move on those three sets of door issues.
Okay.
All right, and that was the school security threat update. Make sure I got everything here. Okay. One other issue before I move on to the summary. The summer help. We always have summer help, and we first have to ask our classified staff if they want to do any of the work. Students, it's $8 an hour. Adults, it's $10 an hour. Summer is when our custodians and maintenance crew have their vacation as well. So we always have to fill gaps and make sure we have enough bodies getting the buildings clean. Brian came to me today and reminded me, hey, can we go ahead and do that? I want to make sure there's not an issue with the board. We do it every year. Last year we had a cap of about $13,000 on it. Brian was hoping that we can get students, but again, by contract, we have to offer that type of work to our classified staff first. So there's no issues. I'm gonna go ahead and tell him to get that lined up as well. I don't wanna come into the school year and buildings not be ready.
Okay. You've generally been pleased with the work they do?
Yeah, we have. And that's part of what, you know, Brian's done a good job of setting it up to where there's always somebody managing whatever job task they have lined up. If it's doing these floors out here, you know, maybe it's Herbie that's in charge of this, making sure it gets done correctly. The students and the workers are never unsupervised as far as making sure the job gets done right. So I was real pleased with it this year. We had, I think, one of the best years ever as far as the school opening way it looked. So. Okay. My summary, I just wanted to quickly, this is not, I want to be clear, this is not about the superintendent. This is about the board and the community and the school district as a whole. So if you just open that up, Todd, I wanted to kind of remind everybody, and honestly, I'm glad Ken is here because he'll remember some of this. These were the primary goals that we had set out, and I just went back through in my mind, wanted to see, okay, where are we at? And staying off the ballot, that was one of the things that we really coveted for a long time, to get off the ballot because we were just so tired of asking, and we did that by converting that operating levy to a continuing. Beautifying the campus and facilities, that was one of our goals, to get enrollment, to stabilize, so when folks came by and they saw our campus and they saw the field house, they were happy the way things looked and wanted to pick Madison Plains. And number three, and these are in no particular order, but to increase our enrollment, we wanted to stop that 25-year decline we had been on. We've done that, as Todd reported out at the last meeting. Renew the PI to get it lined out there so we can clear the field in that area. Improve our academics. As Karen pointed out so eloquently at several of our meetings, our student progress is really second to none in the state. I was very happy to see that. And then securing new operating funds. We knew we had to do that. We had to get that. We knew that, you know, 6-7 years ago when it was coming at us. So if that holds true, we've done that. All those things have cleared the field so we can begin master planning. I know Corey, one of the first questions Corey had for me is, are we master planning? And it's hard to tell somebody, no, we haven't. And the reason being is all those things we knew as a board, and I look at Ked because he was there, and we said, we've got to clear this field before we can talk about buildings. And I'm very excited that if the income tax levy holds true, is passing, now you have the opportunity to begin talking about master planning. So I think the field is set, hopefully for your new superintendent, whoever that is, they get to come in and start talking about that and keep the focus on the academics, which has always been one of our goals, to get away from talking about levies. So I just wanted to remind the board where we're at, and it's a very good place, and I'm just happy to report out. I think we've gotten where we wanted to get to. So that's my report, and we can move on.
Thank you. I'll move to Section K, personnel.
We have a motion that the recommendation superintendent of the board for personnel items K2 through K7.
Second.
Discussion.
On the supplemental, the varsity girls basketball head coach, I welcome Aaron. I'm excited to see hopefully some positive change for that program. Good things to bring to the table.
Thank you.
I'd like to second that. I'm really glad to have you on board.
Glad to be here.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Section L.
I have a motion that the recommendation of the superintendent for approved business items L2.
Second. Sorry.
Discussion?
If I can jump in here, I'm sorry, I missed it on the last approval, but I want to point out that all of our teachers, you know, Diane and Morgan both that are leaving, even our Ape Patrice are valued employees, but truly Morgan just stands out to me as one of our best. She's taken another administrative job, which it should be a feather in all of our cap that one of our teachers is moving up, and we should take great pride in that, but I do hate to lose her, so. She's a big loss. Sorry to interrupt.
Great science teacher.
Yes.
I think we move in second discussion for Section L, the consent agenda. All right, roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
All right, move to Section M, donations.
Mr. President, I make a motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve the following donations as listed below: $250 from ABS and $40 from Sterling Health and Wellness.
Second.
Discussion. As always, we appreciate all the donations that we get.
Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
No new. So move to Section O, executive session. I move that upon motion we enter into an executive session at 8:27 for the purpose of Section 1, to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, compensation of a public employee or official, or the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated official. Or Section 5, matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes. Items are allowed under the following revised code, 121.22G.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
There'll be no action taken after the executive session. The next meeting is a special meeting, will be held May 23rd at 6 p.m. Then on May 5th is a special meeting, June 5th, special meeting at 6 p.m. And our next regular meeting, again, this is a change time, will be held June 14th at 7 p.m. All meetings are here in the district meeting office. Thank you.